Part three with Patty. Patty, I had a sense that we might go a little long on this session, so which I was happy and open to be a part of. So, but anyways, thought maybe this last one, like I mentioned before, is like, let's just talk about really the things, kind of like the more mechanical things that set somebody up well in, we'll even go into the advanced guide course, but then more specifically the exam. Like some of the things that you've experienced that you worked on before and then during that really set you up. You know, and I feel really fortunate because just before your exam, I had the opportunity to come out to Red Rocks and climb with you and our friend Chris, who you mentioned earlier, for a few days, kind of as prep. And it was kind of awesome just to be a client for several days, 3 days of just like fun, you know, like legit kind of exam routes and getting to see you do your thing, seeing kind of where you are, having conversations about whatever it is that we're talking about kind of in an exam context. So, you know, it was really fun being in that role. I've played that role before. I helped Silas and Peter get ready for their Alpine exam out in the Cascades. So I got to be that role too. And it's kind of a fun place because I get to go get rope gunned up all this stuff, and then be like, this is what I would have done, you know, or whatever. So, but anyways, let's dive into some of the things that, you know, might be really useful for people in this process or thinking about this process.
Well, first off, it was no one I'd rather have with me out there before the exam than you, Dick. So
Well, thank you.
you kind of. Yeah, you take that award of probably being my most present and the most lasted mentor that I've really had in this rock climbing experience, rock guiding experience. So it's just a treat to have you out there. Well, yeah, I mean, I think that segues in nicely. First of all, I came to Red Rock, right? I had that opportunity after my advanced course to come out guide out here, and it wasn't really with the intention of taking my exam, I'd say. It was more so, okay, like I'm now certified after my advanced course to guide grade three terrain, you know, grade four supervised. So let's go see what that feels like, and let's put ourselves out there, which is a totally different experience. I mean, I kind of talked about it previously, but to actually be guiding a 10 pitch route with clients that maybe it's their first, second, third multi-pitch ever, that's a pretty big responsibility, I'd say. So first thing I did was I just did that a lot. I did a lot of one-to-one guiding. I did a lot of two-to-one guiding this year in particular. So this season, I got here the end of February, and my exam was April 24th. So I had a full, all of March and most of April. And I was fortunate enough to get a lot of two-to-one guiding in this season and just practice. And it never even felt like I was practicing for the exam. I was just guiding. And that in and of itself just gave me all of that experience. And like I said earlier, how much harder it is to guide clients than guides. So I keep returning to that because it's something that just felt so true to me through the exam. And that's kind of why it almost felt easy for me in the exam, because guides are just so quick to give you gear back. They're taking care of themselves. You don't have to tell them to drink or eat. They're just doing it. All these things that you can actually focus on creating the best experience, because oftentimes in an exam setting, you're actually guiding routes that are sort of at the upper level of what you would be comfortable guiding, at least for me. I mean, we can go into the nuts and bolts here of the exam, and that we'll just get into that because that works nicely. So yeah, day one, we did a route called slot machine into edge dressing, which is a couple 5-10 pitches there into full dark shadows, which is a very popular 10 pitch 5-8 route. So they kind of two routes that merged together at a certain point. And then you're on 5'8" terrain to the top with somewhat of a complex descent. And the way that they do it is you essentially are in the lead for part of the day, and then you're in the backseat for part of the day. Day one, I was able to be in the backseat for the first 5 pitches, so I didn't have to lead any of those 5-10 pitches day one, and then I got to just lead full dark shadows, which for me, I've already guided multiple times this season and last season. So that felt like a pretty easy day for me because I already knew how to do it. And it actually, I was just so able to focus on the connecting with the people, which is why I like to guide anyway, which, yeah. So it that's why it felt fun for me. And then the second day, we did Community Pillar, which is a very famous AMGA route. They love to do it. If you're going to take a course or exam, go climb Community Pillar, because there's a few things on it that are tricky to do as far as guiding goes. You know, there's some route finding things on it. There's multiple different types of climbing. You have to be able to climb easy, kind of off with the terrain. You got to climb some awkward hand crack 5'9" terrain. That's, you know, it's just a little bit blue collar up there, I'd say, as far as Red Rock goes. There aren't a lot of really nice face holds the whole way. You got to kind of do some interesting climbing. And that all kind of leads you up to the top of this pillar eventually. And then there's a pretty challenging up to down transition that you have to do. That there's a few ways to do it, and so that's kind of the overwhelming part. And I didn't have to do that down section because I did the down before. So I started out that day and led the first 5 pitches, and then the other guy took over, and then I finished for the last 2 rappels of the descent. Sometimes they'll like throw you in this hot seat again just to keep you there and not checked out, essentially. So that day also went really well for me, you know, the up to up, all that stuff. I had prepared by actually climbing that route before the exam, my first time climbing it. So on the exam is my second time climbing it. I didn't have to onsite it, luckily. And that felt like a huge advantage there. You want to add anything, Dick? Are you good?
No, keep going. You're doing great.
And then the third day we had our sport climbing day, which I thought was pretty interesting. In that day, they frame it so that, and I've heard it's been different a few different ways. It's kind of a rest day, also just a chance for them to see that you can pretty comfortably climb 5'10" sport. They'll put you on a 5'11 or 5'12 route more than likely, just to see what happens, you know, how you deal with a harder route. And they won't grade you for movement on it, but they'll just kind of see how that goes for you. And the actual intentional or formal lesson there that you have to actually teach. So the way that they did it, we had a 15-minute lesson. We got to choose the topic. I ended up choosing bailing and aiding techniques for sport climbing, which was super fun to teach. I had a lot of fun doing it. Went really well. The sport climbing went really well. At the end of the day, we got on a famous 11D sport route. I took a really big whip right before the chains and pulled right back up, and then went back up to the chains, clipped them, came down, had a great day. Like, awesome day. I think that's kind of a rest day. I thought they could have, yes, done a little more intentional work there to give you a chance to guide that day. It felt more just kind of like climbing with the friends that day. So that it was kind of nice in that way. And then day 4, we had a choice of routes that we wanted to guide. And, you know, we were dealing with some hot temps, so shade routes were kind of a must. And the guy that I was with chose to do slot machine to edge dressing, which I'd already done, but it didn't really affect me because I had to follow it a second time, right? So it didn't really matter. I was just declining that experience. And then I chose to do risky business after that, which, you know, risky business is a route that has a lot of folklore to it. The name in and of itself says a lot. And maybe that's getting back to my point earlier of like, all of a sudden I'm guiding a route that I've never guided before, that I would be kind of intimidated to guide with clients. And here I am on my exam, I'm going to be guiding it, right? And there's definitely spots on the route where, like all guiding, where you definitely don't want to fall. But you know, I kind of remind myself, when was the last time that I unexpectedly fell on 5'10"? And for some people, that might be yesterday. But for me, it's been a really long time since I unexpectedly fell on 5'10", right? And that morning, I was just fully in the self-care mode, stretching, meditating, centering myself. The whole day, I took care of myself. I was hydrating, eating well, because I had to do the second half of the day. So by the time I was doing risky business, it turned out to just be one of the best guiding experiences I've ever had. And the two people that were with me, my examiner and Adam, one of the other candidates, you know, they had a great time. They expressed that. And it was just a fun time. And I was in love with the moment the whole way up that route. And that, to me, if you can find that in guiding, like, that's it, right? That's this culmination of being on the edge, but also being capable and finding the determination to really want to be there and to show up and create an experience for somebody that they will hold on to and remember and be able to look back on and say, wow, that was one of my favorite days of climbing I've ever had.
Nice.
So that was a big day for me. That was kind of like, I think, you know, that so far, that this is day four, the whole exam has felt kind of just like I've been casual and connecting. I'm working hard, but I'm not stressed. And day five, we come into our final day. All of a sudden it's here. It's like, you just do 5 days of climbing and we're doing the Gobbler and the Dream Wild Turkeys. So, you know, a longer route, but nothing crazy. I think it's 7 pitches to the top. And I led pretty much the second half of the day and the descent. So I led most of Dream Wild Turkeys and coming down, and it went really well. And I was surprised that we never did a grade 4 route, number one. I was surprised that, that to me was the biggest thing. I felt like in some ways they really missed something there. To me, if you're going to certify people to guide grade 4, you should be climbing a grade 4 route. And I think that some exams, of course, have that in them. For whatever reason, it just didn't happen this time. So I feel like we kind of got off a little easy with the 8-hour days car to car every single day. And then the final day, day 6, is the debrief day, which is super chill. You just go meet, you have a group debrief and all that stuff. So some of the skills through that you're tested on, you know, of those routes, they really pick routes that kind of bring out certain problems. So, like, for example, the full dark shadows route, day one, you have to, you know, there's some short roping involved and kind of a complex descent to get down. So they want to see how you're going to, you know, get people through that terrain. Community pillar, it has that really challenging up to down transition, especially if you're on sighting. It's just kind of hard if you don't know the terrain. Risky business, you know, you're dealing with cruxes off of the belay. So you have to utilize the fixed point belay much of the time on that route. So, you know, you're setting that up, what does that look like? Gobbler to Dream Wild Turkeys on Gobbler, it's really nice if you haul packs for your client on that. So they want to see you haul packs there. There's all these little skills that go a long way to making the client experience seamless and enjoyable. And there's not a lot of faffing around for them, right? Mm-hmm. Ideally, there's minimal. In some ways, to me, the exam, when it was finally done, I was like, wow, like, it just felt like another week of guiding, which all of that felt that way because of, I think, all the work that I put in beforehand. You know, Dick and Chris came out. I had 3 days with them the week before the exam where we did 3 5-10 routes that all were, you know, anywhere from 5 to 8 pitches long. And we were just doing a lot of discourse on, you know, what would you do here? Or let's just talk about our options here and let's play stuff out. And it was just nice to climb with guides again, because I think climbing with guides is so different than climbing with clients. So if you can, for all these courses, go climb with other guides, because it will just set you up to be ready for that space a little better of and what it's like in there. Because there's a little bit of some weird role playing happening but it's not actually role playing. It's just, you know, they want to know what you're thinking about and what you're being intentional about. So you have to voice that, like, hey, there's a side pole over here that you might want to just know it's here, but you got it. Other than that, like, I'm not going to tell you how to climb the route, but I'm going to maybe let you know of a hidden hold, or I'm going to tell you how I put a cam in if it's really weirdly placed, or, you know, you're coaching. You don't want to overdo it, but you don't want to not do it either. You're still doing briefs at the base. You're teaching about cams and nuts. Even a client who's climbed 10 multi-pitches before might need a rebriefing on how to take a cam out and put it on their harness, because it's been a year maybe. So just show them that. So I think the number one way to prepare for any of this stuff is to actually go guide, right? It doesn't need to be on big terrain. It doesn't need to be on anything hard, even 5'10". Like, it could just be on wherever you work, wherever you live, getting as much time. And if there's nothing big enough for you there, then go on a trip with, and make sure you're in a party of three to practice actually guiding two people at once a lot, really as much as you can, for that to just become intuitive for you.
Nice. Yeah. It's interesting. You were talking about that, like getting into that headspace for risky business. I remember having a very similar experience on my, I guess it's called the Rock Guide course. It might've been called the Rock Instructor course at the time I did it in the late 90s. They keep playing around names, but I had this assignment to do this route, and I was a little nervous about it at the time. And, you know, I ended up spending the whole evening before just visualizing the route. I had never climbed it, so I was on-sighting it. And I just visualized the route. You know, I was going to be in the hot seat all day. And then ended up climbing the route and, like, just having a blast. Like, just feeling really good about the movement, climbing, all that stuff. And then the instructor on the course was like, wow, you kind of did this better than I would have done it. And I was like, sweet! You know, and it was just because I had taken this time to calm down enough to just focus on some of the slightly bigger picture thing that as big as I could kind of go then. And that just freed me up to kind of move, like you said, more intuitively with less thought into these environments and into this technical climbing and the anchors and all this stuff. So, you know, one thing I think is useful for people who are going to go out on a trip to get ready for a course and exam, and like you said, going out with the right ratios. And I've experienced this a couple times as I've been in this position, you know, out with you and Chris, but also you mentioned with Silas and Peter, is like, just like anything, as you go in, don't start too hot. Like, ease into that experience and into terrain and into like the reason why you're there. Because I just think, like, we went to go climb Community Pillar, right? So like, oh, this is a pretty classic route. We should go climb Community Pillar. And we kind of didn't find it. Like, we found it, but we didn't nail the approach, right? And it was just because we, like, whatever, took the long turn, wasn't quite where we were. And we climbed something else, which had a lot of value. But it's kind of like we kind of came in a little too hot. I had the same experience in the Cascades with Silas and Peter. Like, the first day and a half, we came in too hot, totally had a retreat, bail. We didn't even get to the base of the route. You know, we just bivvied somewhere at night. We're like, all right, I guess we're out of here tomorrow, you know, and then we kind of slowed our roll a little bit and then ramped up into the terrain and the routes that we needed to be on. So I think sometimes coming into this stuff, don't come in too hot. Like, roll in, get your groove on, and then when you're ready, you know, go ahead and punch that bigger terrain or whatever you're trying to do to prepare. Because I've just seen it play out a couple of times that when you come in too hot, it gets a little.
Yeah, especially, you know, especially day one of an exam. There's some nerves there and some stress and some, you're kind of climbing like you're soloing on a rope. Like, don't fall. Like, if I fall here, like, even following, you're kind of like really, you're really making sure you're climbing well and all these things, and just finding ways to relax and just do what you know how to do, right? And take the time that you need to do what you need to do. Like, I would get to a belay sometimes and I would flip in. Even if they could see me, I don't care. They know I'm at the anchor. I would get my bag off. I would take a sip of water. I would eat some snacks. All in under a minute, let's say, but I would take that minute Because if I'm doing everything else right, that minute doesn't matter, right? And so I'm going to take that minute, because the moment I say that I'm off belay and you're climbing with other guides, like, there's no time to do anything. The moment you put them on belay, those ropes are moving the whole time. They get to the anchor. They're there. They're ready. That's not the time to eat the snack, right? The snack, you want to eat the snack before they get there. You want it to set in by the time you're ready to lead the next pitch. And there's a lot of little tips like that that I think you'll start to learn as you just spend more time actually in these scenarios.
Nice. One of the things, Patty, I really appreciated when we were out for those few days before is how dialed you were in at the like up to up, you know, transitions. Like, cause we did a lot of routes with like very exposed hanging belays with very little ledge. So a lot of the times we were lap coiling, which I hate to lap coil, but they're highly appropriate when the terrain dictates to you. But you also, like, even on some of these smaller stances, you're like, no, I think we can fit a rope. I think we can fit the ropes here, and then put them on the ground, which I appreciated. But you were super dialed in, even though we were still being casual, right? We weren't out to like break any time records, but there was no wasted motion in those transitions. So like your comment before, the minute you spend doing the self-care doesn't matter, because all the other things you're doing right, the bigger pictures and the little details, that you're not wasting time there. So you can take a little more time where you need to refocus on some bigger picture things, whether that's your own personal care or, oh, we need to start moving in this kind of way for this next section or whatever it is. And I really appreciated, like, you were really dialed in with all those transitions, the rope work. We weren't faffing around, and, you know, going in super clean anchors every time. We're all clipped in super clean, being very diligent about that. So there was just no confusion, right? There's no like, oh, there's a rope crossing here. It was just always clean, always done. And we just could just flow. And I think that's, you know, once again, that seeing you perform in those ways through those few days is why I was like, you're a certified rock guide in my eyes. You're just about to go get the paper from these other people. Like, I can't give you the paper, but if I could, I would right now, you know, because I could see that level of detail and just flow over the little details with the big details as well. So,
yeah. And I think in a lot of ways, Zach and I showed up to our advanced course like that. I don't feel like I've, like, as far as my up to up, I've gotten better, of course, since my advanced course to now, but we had just put a lot of time into practicing that stuff. Acadia just taught me. I just had time in the actual saddle doing it and making the mistakes and, you know, having to figure out how to problem solve once you make a mistake, because that's when you start to have to use some tricks, as you've always said, that hopefully you don't have to use, but that you can resort to if you have to. And yeah, I think it's really important to show up just feeling like the course or the exam is like an experience that you're going to have. It's not gifting you any new ability necessarily. Like, of course you're going to learn some things from other people, I would imagine, and you're going to be challenged and you're going to learn from yourself and mistakes, but it's just it's just an experience to have that is going to you're going to be able to look back on. And it's sort of a milestone, right? It's not like, okay, I'm a rock guide, now I can go guide. It's like, well, no, I've been guiding, like you said, you know. And yeah, I think that's a really important point.
I also think it's really important, like, if you're gonna go to an area that's new to you, to go early enough to just understand, like, where's the trailhead? Where is it roughly to get to this route or this whatever? You know, because it takes so much bandwidth just to figure out those details and stress about those details. Am I on the right trailhead? Did I make the right left turn? I think I did, you know. And I used to think on-site guiding was like the true test of a guide. And I do think that is one test of a guide to see what you come up with. But if you go and climb a route and you know it, when you actually guide it, especially in an exam, you should be able to just like make it seamless. Like, because now you've understood like where the quirkiness is of a route, or maybe shifting an anchor a certain place, or doing whatever, hauling a pack here, really, makes the experience for that person, whether they're examiner or just a client, exceptional. So I do think there's no harm or foul in climbing a route and knowing it really well and then being examined on it. But the caveat is like, you should be able to kind of like nail it because you have that experience. If you don't nail it, all right, well, there's probably a bigger problem going on there. But
I felt a little bit of that pressure. I mean, everybody knew that I got in Red Rock. I was the only person on the exam that actually works here where it was happening. And I think the alternative, if you don't work here, call a local guide service. Say, hey, like, I just have a few questions. I'm taking my exam or a course here. Do you have any tips for this route or that route? Like, it could be a minute long conversation and they could just tell you one thing that might help you about the approach or about the descent or about a little guide crux on the route itself. So don't be afraid to reach out. Maybe, and that kind of circles back to what I was talking about earlier about building community and mentorship. Don't be afraid to ask for something. The worst they say is no, right? Or, hey, sorry, I can't help. But odds are people are excited for you to be in this process and want to help. Just be careful about being given too much beta and trying to think too much about how you're going to do it when you get there. It all comes back to this foundational thing that we talked about earlier of critically thinking in the moment. Like, you can think, you were talking about this earlier. You had a vision of the route and it went really well, which is great. But I also see that people can have a vision of how they're going to do something and they get there and they do it that way. And they do a great job of doing their vision, but they miss something entirely. And all of a sudden they're doing something that, now that I'm in the client role, I'm like, they're missing this because they're so sucked into that vision that they're not actually present in that moment. They're doing something that's already existing in their mind. And guiding in general, I think, is just a practice of constantly being aware of your surroundings, of being aware of yourself, of how you, all these things come into play, and just you're practicing, you're stretching that mind muscle to just work out there. So don't underestimate that as probably the most important tool that you're going to have anytime you go guiding anywhere.
Nice.
Yeah.
Patty, I just got a reminder that I only have 9.5 minutes left. So we've clearly been able to talk for quite a long time. I've certainly enjoyed it. But let's start tapering out of this.
Yeah.
I feel like we've kind of covered a lot of stuff and a lot of different realms that all interconnect. But, it's interesting. It's interesting being in my position as, I guess, an official mentor. Like I hold that role. Like, I've done it for a long time in Acadia Mountain Guides. And it's a very, I feel pretty humbled to do it, that people care about what I have to say, and feel pretty privileged to be in that position. And I feel like my job, or part of my job as a mentor, is to support people, right? Like, I'm trying to support your journey. I'm trying to provide some perspective on whatever it is in that journey that you may not be seeing at the time. I'm certainly going to try to stretch the rubber band. I might even be a harsh critic at sometimes, it's kind of my job. And, I feel like part of your job as being in the kind of mentee role is to put up with all that. So thank you. But also push me, right? Because I truly believe that mentorship is not a linear process. It goes back and forth between the parties involved. So like, we're both mentors to each other in our own ways. But in terms of like, one of the things that every kind of mentor, if we're going to think about the hierarchy of me being older, more experienced, wilder, blah, 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 and you, is that every mentor wants their mentee to surpass them. that's our goal. That's my goal, is like someday Patty's gonna be a lot better at this than I am. And you are. You're a lot better. If you want to go climb a long rock route in Red Rocks, like I can get you up some stuff for sure, some moderate stuff, but like if you want like the full experience, you should hire Patty. You know, he's gonna take you out and you're gonna do like whatever, and it's gonna be awesome. And like, because that's what Patty does. Patty has definitely surpassed me, and that's I wouldn't say like my job's done, but I feel like, all right, this part's over now. I just get to watch how you unfold and bring your mentorship that you may provide to the, you know, future Patties, right? The future people like yourself who are trying to go through this process, because now you kind of inherit that mantle, right? Kind of more officially when you have a cert, it's like, oh, here it is. You can put it right on the table. So thank you, Patty, for being part of, I guess, my life. Let's just put it that way.
Wow. My heart is buzzing, Dick. Thank you. Yeah, it's been such a beautiful journey for me to get here. And I'll never forget rolling into Acadia 2016, meeting Dick Chassé, the absolute single pitch master, which is how I knew you for a long time, was in that realm. And yeah, you'll always be just such a special mentor to me. So don't hold me too high. Be careful there.
Thanks, Patty. I still have fond memories of your first tea house experience. For all those who don't know, I'm kind of a big fan of Taiwanese tea service every morning, travel with a tea set, the whole thing. And there used to be a really nice Chinese tea house in Bar Harbor, and Patty came in with some other interns to kind of debrief something. And I helped them order some tea. And I believe you had an oolong.
Yeah.
And there is a thing in tea drinking. The tea itself is called liquor. And there's a thing in tea drinking where you can get tea drunk. It's a legitimate thing. And I was like, oh, Patty's there. Patty is just like, what planet am I on? I'm just drinking tea. Yeah, I was like, oh, he is definitely tea drunk right now. So I still remember that. Just like, wow. Oh, yeah. Love to stretch that rubber band.
Yeah, super grateful for you, Dick. Thank you for everything. And yeah, really excited for what's to come for us. And yeah, excited to see you this summer too.
All right. Yeah, like in August, right?
Yeah, I'll be there.
Okay. Well, I'm sure we'll be in touch.
Thanks.
Well, thanks, Patty. Thanks for sharing everything.
Yeah, thanks for being a part of it all and being there for me.
All right. Cool. We're signing off before we have to start a fourth part.